Welcome. I'm Michelle Rowan, President of Franchise Business Review. And today for IFA's Women's Franchise Committee's podcast series, Her Success, I get the pleasure of talking with Shannon Wilburn, who is CEO and co-founder of Just Between Friends, also the 2021 award winner of the Bonnie Levine Award. So I'm so excited. Just Between Friends, 150 franchises or more at this point in 32 states. And I'm so excited because I also have known and loved working with Shannon for many, many years. So I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Me too, because it's like I'm talking to a good friend.
I know. This will be so great. So I want to start with, because I love it when I get to talk to the founder. So when you founded the company, it wasn't a franchise. So I'd love for you to talk about founding Just Between Friends and then kind of that leap into franchising, what that was like for you.
Sure. And I just told this story yesterday afternoon to four new franchises that we had. We have franchisee training. And so it took me 20 minutes. So I will promise not to take 20 minutes to tell the story. I love to give details. So for those who don't know, Just Between Friends is we're basically a marketplace for families to buy and sell gently used children's and maternity clothes, toys, and baby equipment. So we don't have brick and mortar locations. We're an event-based business where our franchise owners host two or three events, in-person events. They rent out a large space like a convention center or a fairgrounds or empty retail space to host an event where they invite families to bring their gently used children's and maternity items to the event, drop them off. Families in the area come in and shop those items, most of the items gently used, so they're saving 50 to 90%. So anyway, that's kind of how the concept works. And when I was 27 years old, so 1997, my co-founder and I started this company just based on a need that we had in our own business. I mean, in our own lives. So I had a one-year-old and a two-year-old at the time, and she had a three and a four-year-old, and we needed to be able to save money, and we needed to be able to help our family's income. And so it was kind of that win-win situation where we were saving money, and then we were also clothing our children at the same time. And we knew we had that need, and there's a much, much longer story of how I grew up shopping consignment. So it was just in my blood. Married a youth pastor, and so we just didn't have money, and so we needed to do things that would help out our budget, and so this was what we did. So we hosted the first event in my living room. We convinced 17 families in our area, mostly from our church, to bring us their gently used items, and Devin is my co-founder. Devin and I got all of those items ready, and within a weekend, we sold $2,000 worth of merchandise. We knew we didn't want it to be a garage sale, so it was inside. We used the kitchen drawers as cash drawers. Someone tried to buy the couch. So it was funny. But when we were done with that event, the shoppers that came were like, when are you doing this again? Because they had saved so much money. And the sellers that sold are like, when are you doing this again? Because they had made money. And so we just started doing it pretty much on a 6-month cadence, every 6 months. So most families clothe their children in the spring and then again in the fall, because you have to reclothe your children. And so, did that in Tulsa. It just grew just every season, just grew and grew and grew. So about 3 years in, we had friends and family around the nation that wanted to start doing this in their area. And I didn't know what franchising was and had no business background. I was just kind of learning on the fly. And so we let them use the name Just Between Friends. I wouldn't recommend that. It really, really helped us. But I didn't know that, you know, trademarking was, I hadn't even thought about trademarking. So the way we started was not how I would recommend most brands start. So my elementary education degree did not give me a lot of information. But anyway, it worked. 6 years in, the Tulsa business was doing very well, probably grossing about $400,000 in two events a year. And we decided to franchise the concept because a business associate of mine suggested it, because we had 10 Just Between Friends around the nation. and people thought we were a franchise. And so we went, that we had just helped those ladies get started, and they were helping us with operations stuff. I mean, so it was very engaging. Mm-hmm. And so we started franchising in the end of 2003, went to them and said, we want you to be our first charter members. And almost all of them became our first franchisees. So when we started franchising, Michelle, we had 10 franchises to start with. And we made a special royalty deal with them. And so we started with those highly engaged people, and we had validators from the start. I didn't even know that term. Proved the concept.
I just got like 10 million lessons for leaders in that one story alone. So you mentioned that your college education did not necessarily prepare you for business, but I think having an education background is fantastic as far as thinking about how you train and support people. So I think that that's an interesting thing that you didn't see that, but I think that one, especially elementary, you're wrangling people and you're selling them on an idea, because they're not likely to follow your lead in an elementary classroom right off the bat.
I'll tell you, Michelle, that my attorney, she said, Shannon, and I'm not bragging or anything, this is just what she says. She says, Shannon, you're the best type of franchisor because you could teach kindergarten. So sometimes you have to like coddle the franchise zone.
Empathy, right?
And thank them, you know, like they have to get in trouble a little bit. But yeah, empathy, and just knowing that just because you say to do something, you have to tell them why, and you have to lead by example. Anyway, so it's, I think it's funny that she made that connection.
Yeah, I totally see it. And the other part too is, I think that it's interesting that you say you kind of winged it. You have a grassroots franchise system that started out of necessity. And I think that it's great that I think a lot of people that don't know you, if there is anyone in franchising that doesn't know you well, which would surprise me, everyone, I think that when you're sitting in the audience, everyone looks so put together and that they have it all figured out when they're on stage, but there's so many missteps or lessons learned along the way. And you reminded me of that. Like, I think Shelley Sun does a nice job in her book, The Grow Smart, Risk Less, where she talks about what she did well and what she didn't. And I'm wondering if you can think of any other... that was not even planned or plugged. I have it on my shelf too, and I always recommend it. Can you think of any other resources that you used in that beginning? I know that what I loved about when I met you, and I don't even remember how long it was. What I love is that you always seemed putting yourself out there to ask those questions or to learn from people and to kind of collaborate, which I think is a huge pro of the franchise industry. But I'm wondering what you remember from those early days as far as how did you get your bearings in growing your franchise system, which was so outside of your comfort zone?
Yeah, you know, back to something you said, Michelle, about when you hear panelists speak and you hear people, they look so put together. When I spoke at the Springboard event at the end of 2019, I was on a panel. I think there were 9 of us. So me and 8 men, and in a room with a bunch of emerging brands. And one thing that I said that multiple people came up to me afterwards and said that resonated with them, as I was like, you see people up here that have perceived success. Mm-hmm. But not everyone is successful in every area. And so we're only speaking on the things where we feel like we can add value. And so you're gonna come away thinking that we all do all of this stuff well. But every one of us has weakness in our brands. And that's just the fact of franchising. You can't do everything well, which is why we always need to learn and grow. And so to the advice that I give people, I think it's really surround yourself with smart people. And Michelle, I ask those questions and put myself out there. I think first off, that's my personality. Yes. I know I don't know everything. And the only way that I'm going to learn is by asking questions. And if someone doesn't want to you know, answer my question, then, I mean, I don't have anything to lose, I guess, by asking questions.
Yeah.
And so that has been one of the things that I've just not done necessarily strategically. It's just based out of need. It's like, I need to know this stuff. And
yeah.
And I don't even just need to know it so I can know it, but I need to know it because I'm responsible for 150 plus franchise owners, their livelihood, their success, their profitability. And if I can't lead in that, then how are they going to be able to do that? I mean, they need to be doing the same thing in their business. They need to be always continually learning.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, so when I think back about my journey in franchising, when I started, there weren't a lot of women on stage. They definitely did not seem approachable. I would never have just walked up. And I think that we kind of came into this at the same time where it kind of started getting warmer. I don't know if that makes sense, but I picked up on your energy and that you were willing to share as much as you were asking, and nothing came across as like, she doesn't know what she's doing and that's why she's asking questions. It came from, I care so much about my people on my team, my people that I'm supporting in their businesses. And so do you feel that change in just the community? I know that I've seen, because it's also, we knew each other pre-Facebook, and now you have Facebook where you get to see people and their lives a little bit more. And I know that you are very good about connecting with other female leaders in franchising and that you do retreats and things like that. But I just want to know, like, did you initiate those, and did you feel that kind of happening organically before you started putting those groups and those trips together?
So that kind of makes me want to cry just thinking about that, because I remember feeling, I don't know that I ever felt lonely, but I felt like, I think all of us want to have people that look like us and think like us. You know, we want to surround ourselves with that type of person. And for me, what I always look for too is people who are successful in their own right. What can I learn from them? So when I saw, you mentioned we've been in franchise, I started coming to the International Franchise Association in 2007. And so I remember meeting Mary Thompson, who is now the COO of Neighborly, which used to be the Dwyer Group. And she was, at that point, she was president of Mr. Reuter. And Devin and I just happened to sit down at a table at the Bash, that last thing that we do at IFA. I felt like a fish out of water. I felt like, and I am not afraid to go up to people and introduce myself or anything like that, but I still felt intimidated a little bit, overwhelmed, because it's, you have so many C-level people, so many smart, vivacious people in franchising, and you feel like a peon a little bit. You're like, oh, you know, I don't want to feel this way. But that's just kind of how I felt in the beginning. And I know that was totally on me, right? Because everyone has just been more than kind, more than gracious, sharing, engaging, but sat down at that table, and Mary introduced us to her team that was at the table. And it just was very, and she's a warm personality, just a great leader in franchising, a great leader in life. And so it was nice to see a woman in a leadership position. And I didn't know about the Dwyer Group right then. She told me, oh yeah, we have, you know, at that point, I think they maybe had 8 or 9 brands under the Dwyer Group. And so I was like, oh, okay. So I understood that was kind of one of the first shared services brands that I had come across.
Yeah.
And so I got to meet her and got her contact information. But then it was, I think maybe it was pretty soon after that, Dina Dwyer became the chair.
Yeah.
That was the first time that I had seen a woman in the chair position in IFA. And I was just sitting in the audience that year, just like, yes. And I don't know why that meant so much to me, but just seeing another woman succeed to that level, it just made me proud. And I didn't know Dina.
Yeah.
But watching her lead with grace and with honor and with ethics and her code of values. And I was like, man, I want to go back and put in a code of values, and I want to run my company like Dina runs her company. And so anyway, those were two women that influenced me. Melanie Bergeron, when she took the chair position, and I know Melanie is a faith-filled person like I am, and I loved how she was not scared to talk about Jesus from the stage. And it made me want to be a better leader when it came to my faith in my franchise system. And so just watching other leaders trying to emulate their behavior, because I mean, I still have so much to learn, Michelle. I mean, I don't, there's nothing in me that feels like I have arrived. It's kind of like when I got that Bonnie Levine award, I'm like, oh, why did they choose me? I'm like, oh my gosh. I felt totally like undeserving.
Yeah. And well, let's talk about why you deserve that award, because you are unbelievable. Okay. You are so deserving. So the things that I love is that you show up with your team. You're usually all branded together, and you know when you guys are there, not because you're wearing the same shirts, but you have the same energy. You have the best team. Everyone that I've met on there is so proud of the brand, is so supportive of each other. And there's just this, you just want to be around you guys. So I think that you're not even just surrounding yourself with people that are smart, but also too, that have that spirit about them and have that service kind of mentality. And yes. So I always talk about I always look for people that have worked in hospitality. I love those people because they serve people. And the other thing that I've just started putting together as I get older is that I grew up in the church. I grew up going to church. It was important to my family. And I'm trying to figure out how you instill that not just obligation to serve your community and serve the people that you work with or for, but also just that nature of being community-based and being giving. And so I look for ways to do that with my daughter. And you do read that the most successful business people usually are very faith-based. So yeah. I would love for you to talk about, and I do, I think that Dina and Melanie are great examples of people that were authentic on stage and that they truly believe in something bigger than themselves. But you, yes. As I said, you're talking to you with one less kidney in your body. You are, I mean, you are just so amazing in the way that you support your community at church in Tulsa, your franchisees. Do you think that that's driven by your faith, or, you know, what fills your passion and that need to be so giving to people?
Wow. Well, I know it's the Lord. I do know that that's, you know, my faith is a big part. My husband's a pastor, now senior pastor at our church. And so I live and breathe Jesus and Christianity all day long, every day, just in my normal life. And it's something that I feel that I want to share with others. And I will tell you, Michelle, that when we started Just Between Friends, it was something that we knew we wanted it to be part of the mission. You know, that this is a business that will glorify the Lord, mm-hmm. and provide a welcoming, friendly venue for families to come together and get to know one another, just and leave maybe better, feeling better than when they left. But it wasn't. We were probably 3 years into the business before we added the charity component to our business. And it really was because of the need we had. It wasn't this altruistic, oh, Shannon and Devin are going to have a charity aspect because they're such good people. It was, we need to find a way to get these items that our sellers don't pick up. We need a place for the stuff to go. We needed mm-hmm. a donation site. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't in the beginning, it was definitely not a strategic move for the greater good. It was good for me.
Yeah.
It has turned into equal to, if not more than the profitability of the franchise owners over time. And I believe that has been because it's something we talk about. And we measure it. And when we interview franchise owners before we award them a franchise, we talk about the community aspect of the business, and we tell stories of how this business changes people's lives. And you know, there's a book called The Go Giver, and because I did franchisee training yesterday, oh here it is. We give this to all of our franchise owners, and I would suggest this goes to our franchise owners at training. And I talk about just how if you go into your business with the customer in mind and not profitability in mind, and not, yes, you want to be profitable, and yes, we want our franchise owners to be profitable, but we want them, it's so much easier to not have as many worries when you're focused on someone else. When you come into it with the servant attitude, if you know that you've helped someone, then that gives you a happy heart. You know, one of my franchise owners, after reading this book, The Go Giver, at her event, she gave each of her team leads. So she had 8 team leads. So managers, I guess, is what, how that translate to other brands. She gave each of them $100. And her event, I think her event does about $200,000. And so lots of shoppers, probably 4,000 or 5,000 shoppers in and out the door through that week. And she gave each of her team leads $100, and she told them that their goal was to give that $100 away. She didn't care if they gave $10 away to 10 people or $100 away to one person, but by the end of the week, they were to have given that $100 away. And so the stories that came out of that, just of, you know, the single mom who has 2 kids, and she has $40 to clothe all of, you know, her kids. And that money can go really far at just between friends. But if someone comes in alongside you and says, here's another 40, it just, I mean, lots of tears, lots of, you know, I have goosebumps just even telling
that story. I know, joy. I do too. Joy. Yeah. And that reminds me of a story. I went to the prayer breakfast at IFA around that time. It was one of my first ones, and Michael Side was one of the sponsors, and he gave, it might have been $1 or $2 to, and it was on your sitting where you sat, with a note that said, do something with this for someone else. And it's $1 or $2, and it sat on my desk because I was so focused on trying to make the biggest impact with the $1 or $2 instead of just doing something. I was like, I could put it in someone's parking meter that expired, or I, you know, like what could I do with that? And I just thought, I thought so much about it because I wanted it to have a big impact, and the $100 might've paralyzed me. But I think having the timeline driven task to it, that at this event is a perfect way to let people and to just see the joy you bring someone, or the relief. I love that idea. That's fantastic.
I think in our brand, because we talk about it a lot and we share fun stories. And, you know, I talk about stories from all the franchise owners at conference, and then equal to our Franchise of the Year award that we give away annually, we also give away a Community Impact Award. And so the franchise owners have to submit, you know, what they've done in their community, and there's criteria based stuff. Our Franchise of the Year award, we give $1,500 cash. It's not a lot, but it's, you know, enough to motivate a franchise owner to want to apply. And then they get the name Franchise of the Year, which is big. And then they get some other fun stuff that comes with that. But the Community Impact Award is $1,500 total, but $750 goes to their charity partner. And then they get $750. So I think that has been more fun since we implemented this about 5 years ago to give that, because you're giving the award to the franchise owner on stage at conference. But then after that, after they find out that they win, they get to then go give $750 to their charity partner and say, you're the reason that our franchise was honored at our convention. And then that media, and they just get the love. So anyway, it's been a fun way to elevate that portion of our business.
Yeah, and celebrate it. Well, and I think that too, we talk more and more, and for your staff and for your franchise owners that are now coming on board, people that are younger want a purpose-driven life. It's more than the rat race. Yes. And I think that COVID has definitely accelerated people really taking a look at their lives and saying, what do I want to do? What makes me happy? How do I want to spend my time while I make money? And all of these things that we say make us feel good are also good for business. I mean, it's been shown that having that component to your business and having that requirement that your franchisees get involved with their communities, it will help their business. So it's like this, there's no downside to this.
It helps their business and it helps their heart.
I told
my franchise owners last night, because the event-based business is very grueling, you know, when you're doing half your annual income in 6 or 7 days in the spring and half your annual income in 6 or 7 days in the fall, you have to be on, and every issue or challenge that comes up is magnified times 10 because of the time. So if your credit card terminals go down, what are we going to do? You know, if the power goes out, if there's a hurricane or a tornado, if anything goes wrong in that, it can take away half your income. And so our franchise owners have to be kind of, just Johnny on the spot, great problem solvers. But I was talking to them last night about how it's just so important to keep your eye on the people. And I'm sorry, I forgot to turn my notifications off before the podcast, but it's so important to keep your eye on the people, because no one knows that mom that is standing in front of you at the register, she may have just gone through a divorce. And so a kind word, a smile, just making it more about the money. And I think if we can all remember that as franchise owners, as operators, as team members of a franchise concept or any business, it is, it's helpful.
Yeah. I love it. And so you've already picked up and shown me two books that are within arm's length of you. I have a feeling that you're probably an avid reader.
I wish I was. I should be. But when people send me books all the time, and when I get them, I keep them. So I probably, lots of times I'll just read a few chapters in one book instead of reading the whole book, but I probably should. So the Go-Giver, man, that's a quick read.
Yeah, so I haven't read it. I wrote it down. I haven't read that one. Yeah. So that's good. So let's talk about kind of, how you lead people. This past year was probably one of the most challenging, I would guess, in your business.
Yes.
How do you lead people through something like that? Do you have any, stories you can share or just advice that you can give to leaders about how you still focus on your people when you don't have all the things that you get to celebrate together?
Yeah. So, first off, I don't feel like I have done the best job this last year. So again, winning the Bonnie Levine this year, I was like, I did a sucky job as a leader this year and then got celebrated. So, but I will tell you one thing that I implemented, Michelle, in 2017, which I don't know if other brands are doing this, but I mean, I have found it to be so, so helpful. But in 2017, John Francis, who is well known in the franchising industry.
Johnny Franchise.
He helped me. That name is funny to say, but he is, and it, is Johnny it may Franchise. Make you think smart, but he is so smart, experienced, so helpful, so connected. But he helped me put together an advisory board. And so I put an advisory board together and just have a phenomenal advisory board.
I was going to say, you have some rock stars on your advisory board. So feel free to shout out their names, because my goodness, what a get.
Yeah. So Ryan Nowlin is not involved in IFA, but he's with a corporate brand that has like maybe 40 locations or something called Fitness Connection. He's the CTO. Then I have Jay Duke. How did I get Jay Duke? Oh my gosh. And then I have Josh Wall, who is now with Urban Air, was with Christian Brothers Automotive for a while. And then John Francis is on my advisory board. Yeah, I am just like, thank you, Lord, for giving me such smart people. Yeah. But they really were there to, they're kind of there to hold me accountable, because that's what I need them to do. They don't get paid a lot of money to be on my advisory board. It's not a real board. But they hold me accountable. So I do quarterly updates with them. We meet quarterly. But that has been awesome, because when things come up in my business, that challenges that come up, issues that come up that I don't know how to navigate around, one of them will be able to help give me advice. And so any brand, especially emerging brands, if you can get some people who've kind of have some experience, maybe that you don't, on an advisory board, I would call me. I'm happy to kind of walk you through how we did that. It has been a game changer for us. I mean, they kind of held a fire under my butt, if you will, put in a marketing brand fund. We didn't have a marketing brand fund set up. Even in our 15th year. So we just did that in 2019, but they're like, why don't you have this? And then they wouldn't let me get out of it. they're like, you have to do this. So we did. But anyway, when it comes to COVID, I feel like we were all in a state of not knowing what to do. So because we're an event-based brand, we were shut down. No events were happening. And navigating through that was difficult. I have a great rock star on my executive team, Diane Davis, who has lots and lots of event planning experience. Talk about hospitality. She earned her business degree through the hospitality industry with DoubleTree Hotels, being the director of marketing for them for years before I met her 20 years ago. And so she had lots of crisis management experience. So we helped our franchise owners through their contracts with their venues to get refunds, kind of told them what to look for. We started doing weekly community calls with our franchise owners. We had an amazing, like I said, our franchise owners are very engaged. And so we had 21 franchise owners volunteer to be on a COVID task force, and really did the heavy lifting when it came to what they needed to do to get back. And, we were trying to help our franchise owners legally with their contracts, and just really with trying to motivate them to not be super discouraged, because I think we all experienced this. Not all, I shouldn't say all, because some businesses did really well during COVID, and congratulations to them. We weren't one of them. Last year, we were down 37%. So I think the fact that we're still here today is just like, thank you, Lord, for provision, for PPP money, for the corporate office, or the franchise support center is what we call ourselves. And also for our franchise owners receiving PPP money. So this, what's great is there's pent up demand. Oh, yeah. And so our franchise owners that are having their events right now are getting the great blessing of people just having their stimulus check put in their bank accounts. So our franchise owners that are hosting events right now are doing really, really well.
Good. That makes me happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you're focusing on your people. You know, what can we do to help you? There's just a lack of control. Even if your business was doing well, there was a lack of control understanding what was happening. So I think that's
great. I will tell Michelle, that my husband went through we had a personal issue at the end of last year. My husband was in the hospital for 48 days. Intubated twice, flatlined once, so almost died three times. He's alive and well and 90% back to normal. But I wasn't working. I was barely working during those. Really, it was a good 10, 11 weeks. And my team kind of came in and picked up the slack. and led with me needing to spend time with my family. And I was so, so thankful that I had the opportunity to do that. Really, really thankful. So,
and that's when you know you have the right people on your team, because you would do that for any one of them as well. And so it is that kind of surrounding yourself by people that you know have your back and doing that for them. Yes. So that doesn't surprise me that they all stepped in and did that. They're phenomenal.
It did highlight that we need to have some better processes. And you know, when you go through any type of challenge, you learn where the gaps are. And so we're actually going to be taking our team through Traction. We actually have our first meeting tomorrow with our implementer. I know that your company has also done Traction.
Yes.
And yeah, we're really excited to start going through that process.
Yeah, very good. And they just became a franchise system.
I know it. I know. We actually knew that was about to happen, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yay, franchising.
Yeah, I was going to say, welcome to franchising.
Yeah.
Okay, so I feel like we've talked a lot about the people side of leading and how you kind of fumbled your way into now a very strong and large franchise system. You still have things to learn. You're still open to learning and networking and surrounding yourself with people. So how about for the younger female executives that are in franchising now? Do you have any advice that you would give to them as far as how to grow in their role or to grow within franchising? Any advice you would give to them as they kind of try and figure out this wonderful, crazy world that we're in?
Yeah, I think really the same advice is to surround yourself with smart people. And I just met someone who I had not met in franchising at this past virtual conference that we have. And she's been in franchising maybe 4 or 5 years and is just starting to become involved in IFA. And I'm like, you have to like go to stuff. You have to show up. You have to go to the round tables. You have to go to the after parties. You have to like meeting people. I feel like one of the reasons why our brand has succeeded and been sustainable, it's still here, it's still growing, is just based on the sheer value of my IFA membership. And this isn't a commercial for IFA, but I feel like I personally have gotten so much value from the relationships and the networking and the education. It's so easy for me to tell new brands to become a member, because I'm not. So I had a board position for about 3, maybe 2.5 years with an emerging brand with 2 women founders. And I'm like, you have to come to IFA, because I felt like I was giving them all the information that I could from my brain, and that's limited. But when I get around all these other smart people, not just women, but women, it's really, I don't know. There's, but once you start making connections with other people, so one of the areas where I don't feel like I have great value to add in my own franchise or in any other brand is on the financial side. That's why I have Jay Duke and my own CFO kind of there to help me. But when we were going through issues in their brand that had to do with the finances, I'm like, I felt inadequate to be able to help. And it would have been really great if they had a network as well of people that they could reach out to for those specific things. And that's what IFA is about. It is, I think you just can't be afraid to meet people. And I had a friend who I am definitely an outgoing person, I'm not coming up with the right words, but
you're not a shy wall.
No.
That is for sure. Yes.
I'm not. When I go into a room, my extroverted personality, it amps up, because being around people excites me and it makes me, it energizes me. And I had a friend who, she was an introvert, and going to IFA was just like, it would suck the energy out of her. It was just so difficult for her. So she gave herself a goal that she was going to walk into the room, like she was going to show up. She wasn't going to go hang out in her room. She was going to show up, and she was going to give herself a goal to meet a certain amount of people. And that was kind of her way to say that she had gotten value out of it. And now she can go like recoup and energize for the sessions for the next day. And,
I think that's actually a great goal. So that's what I used to do when I first got into franchising, when it was much easier to meet 100 people you didn't know, you know, when you're just starting out, that I would set a goal for the number of business cards I got. And so if you're not comfortable having that conversation right then, you then have somebody that you can follow up one-on-one where it's a little less crazy. So I think that's a really good idea of just kind of setting that goal that I'll just meet them here. I don't have a big expectation that I need to take 100 ideas away from them, but I'm just going to slowly build my network. I think that's a really, really great idea.
It was awesome. She's told me a funny story that she met a waiter and she was like, I want that to count, but it really doesn't.
Yes, it does. I mean, the best was I met a bartender, shocking, at an IFA event. And when I got back, I had a LinkedIn request from him, and I was like, way to go him. Cause he was trying to he was asking about franchising, and he was trying to, I think, leave being a bartender. But I was like, there was no conversation that he had to find me, that he would connect. But I was like, how great, you know, he's having these conversations and understanding, what do I want to do next? And then he's kind of following up on it and following through. So that's great.
Yeah. I would also give the advice to new people in franchising, to definitely get a mentor. And IFA can help with that. They have a program called Friendship. And if you're a member of IFA, that's part of what you get as being a member. You can call IFA if you have a specific area of need, like if you need help in franchise development, which I think all of us do, or if you need help in marketing or something. There are people that have volunteered to help brands, you, whoever's listening and needs this, in specific areas. And again, it is, those are the smart people that I'm talking about. Surround yourself with smart people. You don't have to be best friends with them. You don't have to say, we're going to connect every week for the next 6 years. I mean, it's not like a big commitment, but reach out to other people, because there's nothing new in franchising. There really isn't. And if you're going through something in your brand, other people have already been through it and can give you kind of advice around not having to go through some of the same mistakes. And I want to tell a story real quick. I know you probably have to close this up really. And I was thinking about, knowing we were going to be doing this, thinking about mentors in my life, thinking about people who have really fed into me and turning points in franchising. I love that we have the Women's Franchise Committee and that network, so that people can get, suppliers and franchisors alike can get connected in that space that's more intimate and less intimidating. Yeah. But I was attending a round table, and I had strategically gone to this round table because Melanie Bergeron was leading it. I had no idea what the topic was, but it came around to us talking about feedback from our franchisees. And this was when we had signed on with Franchise Business Review maybe 2 years or 3 years prior to get feedback from our franchise owners. I think we've been working with Franchise Business Review now for 11 or 12 years. And it was specifically so we could get in the ranking. That was my motivation back then. We need to be in this ranking. Let's see how our franchise owners, if they're satisfied or not, let's see how we rank against everyone else. And so we did that for a couple of years, had our franchise owners take the survey. And I sat at that table with Melanie Bergeron and we were talking about feedback. And she said, you know, if you're not getting feedback from your franchise owners, you need to be doing that. And I said, well, we do the FBR survey. She said, do you read the surveys? And I said, well, we haven't paid to get those results. And she kind of shamed me. She was like, Shannon, you're having your franchise owners fill out this long survey and you're not reading their results. And I was like, oh, I need a spanking. I mean, I felt like I felt, she didn't make me feel small on purpose or anything like that, but it was just kind of this turning point in my mind of there's gold and then there are hills, you know, the gold is knowing and understanding how your franchise owners perceive their business and your support, your training, your leadership, your core values, all of that stuff. Because I'm an irrationally positive person, I can easily take a negative and turn it into a positive. And so if someone's not doing well, I'm like, oh, that's just them. So it was that was a turning point for our brand specifically, was Melanie, someone who I adored and thought the world of, just because she started Tumen in a truck. I mean, she didn't start it, her mom started it, but she was leading the brand at the time. And she, a woman in franchising in a leadership position, telling me, you need to be reading those. And you're not going to like what you read. So get a drink, count to 10, count to 100 after you read it, and then come back and do something about it. And it was what we needed. It was not what our brand needed to start focusing more on the satisfaction of our franchise owners. Like, where are we failing? Oh my gosh, we got this comment. Oh my gosh. You know? And so now we do that annually and we look at, I call it the prevailing themes. So you've got all the franchise owners giving you their thoughts and opinions and feedback. And it's hard to read sometimes because you want to feel like you're doing a good job for them and you don't really, well, that person must be mad because they said that comment, or I know who this is, you know, when you get a specific comment. But then going back and seeing our entire staff reads it, and we kind of look at how we can work around the issues that show up in that annual survey. And so that was a turning point for me, specifically because Melanie Bergeron, someone who I adored, a woman in franchising, told me that I needed to care about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Well, what I also like is that, what I've learned in my years of doing this is that I think it's harder. These surveys are harder for founders because you take so personally. Yeah. And so what I say, I think it's harder for founders to pull trigger and ask. I do. And then to not take it personally because it's your brand. You know, it's what you do and you care so much that I always tell people this is their perception and there might be things that you need to do, but there also might just be conversations you need to have to realign. So, you know, it's coming from a place of these people care about the brand. They care about the return on investment. It's constructive in most cases. It's very rare I read things that I'm like, oh, this person just really, you can't turn this person around. So I do appreciate that you talk about how hard it is. And so I just want to ask you or kind of talk about it. You started working with Franchise Business Review in 2009. I looked this up. So, I mean, that's a long time ago. You surveyed four times for free before you bought the data. And I remember, I would say this, I know that this will help you. I know this will help you. So now I know that it was Melanie. I need to send her a thank you. That she turned you around. I did not know that. So that's good. So the other thing is, I would say too, just on the Franchise Business Review front is, do you wish that you had done it sooner? Do you think that it needed to be at that time? Because you were probably back in 2009. I mean, I should have looked up the size of your system, but you probably were a lot smaller than you are now.
Yeah, we sold, 2009 was our largest year. We sold 30 franchises that year because the economy tanked in 2008. We're a recession-friendly brand. And I'm so sorry. This is shame on me for not turning off my notifications. I think my do not disturb starts in 4 minutes, actually. But yeah, I don't, what was the question?
Just what size, like, do you feel like, what's the right size to do this? Or did it need to happen when it happened because of your fast growth, or you felt like you didn't know? Cause usually with founders, it's, I know my franchisee so well, I'm on the phone with them every day. So was there some kind of size or trigger in what was happening in your business that you needed that feedback at that moment?
We started franchising in 2004. Yeah. And or started selling franchises in 2004. We had charter members in 2003. We didn't hear about the International Franchise Association until 2007 when we were looking for a template-based marketing platform. We went to IFA in 2007. We did not go to IFA in 2008 because we felt like we had gotten so much information in 2007 that we couldn't possibly implement all of the ideas. And so we didn't,
we weren't ready for more.
Watching our budget, of course. And, but now I'm like, oh, you know, now I've gone every year for the last 10 years. It's or 11 years. I've gone every year. But in 2009, that was probably our second time to attend IFA. We probably met you, at the vendor booth or whatever. And so we didn't, maybe we had 50 franchise owners at the time, 40 franchise owners. So I think it was definitely, we could have started earlier had we known about you guys. But you just don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And, I don't even know that I was looking at the franchise owners at that time as my customers. I think there was this mentality that the end users, the shoppers and the sellers were my customers. But really my mentality now is that the franchise owners are my customers. That's who I do everything for. That's who we support. That's why we're in business. You know, if they don't do well, we don't do well.
Yeah.
And so when you get out of, because I am a founder, it was that, and at that time, I was still operating my own franchise with Devin. So the Tulsa franchise, until 2011, we were running the Tulsa franchise and the franchise system together. And in 2011 was when I took over as 100% owner of the franchise system, and Devin was the Tulsa franchise owner. Still co-founder of both companies, but I think, you know, you just learn, and you have to decide from a budget standpoint what your priorities are. And that should be a priority. It should be, even if, I hate to say this, but even if you do your own survey, because you need to really understand where your franchise owners are. And it's hard to ask. It's definitely hard to ask, but you have to make yourself do it. Like, make a commitment to yourself. Put that as one of your annual goals, that you're gonna survey your franchise owners on their satisfaction, and you're gonna read the information, and you're gonna do something about it.
And I would say too, if you cannot afford FBR or you're not ready, I totally agree, an internal survey is a great way to start. But by the time you put all your time and energy into it, you could have bought the data from FBR.
Yeah, and it's easy. And then you can share it with, you know, applicants that are looking at your brand. It's a great product, and it's a
great team. I'm so glad that you did it. We love having you as a customer, and I do know that you are so focused on supporting your franchise owners. So it is truly a pleasure to work with you, and it's always a pleasure to see you. So this was so fun. I'm so excited. I appreciate your time. This went longer than I thought, but not surprising. Just lots to chat about.
Yeah. I love to talk, so.
Me too. And I love to listen.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shannon.